Good evening. It's 8 o'clock in Yerushalayim. The parasha is Vayechi. This parasha is donated li Louis Dishmat Rav Pinchas ben Reuven HaKohen Zichrono Livracha. You know, sometimes you learn Chumash and you deal with words, with phrases, with ideas. And that sometimes you look at the Chumash and we learn something because it's missing. Something just not there. And in the case of the Parsha Vayechi, this is a special opportunity to learn Torah because of what's missing. And I'll show you exactly what I mean. The last Pasuk in the previous parasha Yigash, Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim, that's the last Pasuk. B'nei Yisrael sat in Eretz Mitzrayim, they dwelled in Eretz Mitzrayim, be'eretz Goshen, and then you have those words, Vayeachazu ba. They grabbed onto it. They held it. It was theirs. Right? Vechazuba. Vayifru vayirbu me'od. Vayifru vayirbu me'od. And they became numerous, plenty, many of them. Many of them. So it's almost like the pasuk was to leave us with the idea that the reality of Am Yisrael was counter-indicated against the reality that HaKadosh Baruch Hu pressed onto Abraham. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that the bracha, the blessing that Am Yisrael, that his descendants would receive, would be on the one hand the land of Israel, and the other hand, progeny, large, tremendous numbers of people who are children and grandchildren of Avraham Avinu. And here, in a manner that is kind of counter-indicated, it's happening in Mitzrayim. It's happening here in Mitzrayim. Rashi says, Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim, you see the Rashi? Heichan, where were they? They were be'eretz Goshen. Shehi me'eretz Mitzrayim. Like Rashi explains the Pasuk, it's like you're giving you're kind of identifying a place. So you have a large identifier of Eretz Mitzrayim, and then Eretz Goshen, right? The smaller one. And then the next Pasuk says, Vayechi Yaakov be'eretz Mitzrayim, and Yaakov himself, who was old when he came to Mitzrayim, he lived there for 17 years, 17 shana, Vayihi Yemei Yaakov Shnei Chayav, and all in all, how long did he live? Sheva Shanim, Varbaim, Uma'at Shana, 147 years, right? His last 17 years of his life in Mitzrayim. And all in all, he lived for 17 years in Mitzrayim, and Sach HaKol, 400. How he lived all in all, 407 years.
147.
Sheva Shanim Varbaim Umei Ashana. Slicha. My aid is correct. 147 years, all in all. So we have in the first Pasuk that I read, which is the last Pasuk of the parasha of the previous parasha, right? We have like Am Yisrael flourishing, but in the manner that they should have been flourishing in Eretz Canaan, according to the bracha that Avraham Avinu received. I mean, how could you shift the bracha from one place to another? But why did the pasuk say Vayechezuba? Rashi says Vayechezuba l'shon achuzah. I don't know what achuzah means. Either you hold on to it, or it's the word that describes the area of land that you own. Achuzah, something that is yours, something's part of you. So what happened here? I mean, where are they going to? Are they with the bracha or against the bracha? And then Rashi says about the next pasuk, Vayechi Yaakov, Rashi says this, Lama parsha zostuma. Lama parsha zostuma. Satum means stuffed up. Stuffed up, but obviously a parsha is not going to be stuffed up. But what is the word? It's a technical word which refers to the fact that the end of the previous parasha, the words Vayifru Vayirbu Ba'od, are followed immediately by the words Vayichi Yaakov Beretz Mitzrayim. If you look at the Sefer Torah, those of you who happen to have a Sefer Torah, or if you have a kind of fancier Tanakh available to your Chumash, every Chumash indicates that there's really no space between the end of the previous parasha and the beginning of the next parasha. And you know, if you were in the third grade and you wrote two parashiyot like that on your machberet in your notebook, the teacher would mark it with an X, because everybody knows that a new parasha deserves a new beginning. And the new beginning would be at least minimally a new paragraph. Remember, we say in French, we used to say nouveau paragraph. Well, we did dicté. Nouveau paragraph. Why isn't there a paragraph here at the beginning of the parasha of Vayechi? That's what Rashi is saying. Vayechi Yaakov. Look at Rashi. Lama parasha zo stuma. Stuma means there's no space in the Torah between the end of the previous parasha and the beginning of the next parasha. So Rashi says, look, I know it's only orthographic. I know it's not a word that we're talking about, but there's got to be something here that the Torah wants me to know. So Rashi answers the question. Lefi shekeivan sheniftar Yaakov Avinu, when Yaakov Avinu dies, I mean, that's, he didn't die yet in this pasuk, but he's going to die shortly in the story of the last parasha of Bereishit. Since Yaakov Avinu died, nistemu einehem v'libam shel Yisrael. So Rashi says this: since Yaakov Avinu is about to die, they're going to be missing something, because they're missing already. They're missing something because we're in the death throes of Yaakov Avinu. He may not be dead, but he's almost dead. He's on his way to being dead. He became the representative of the dead. Shekevan sheniftar Yaakov Avinu, he's going to die. He has died. He's almost died. His thoughts are on his death. It's all the Yaakov Avinu of death. Nistimu einehem v'libam. Their eyes and their hearts became stuffed up, because they couldn't see so well, and they couldn't feel so well. Einehem v'libam shel Yisrael mitzarad hashiabud sheitchilu l'shavdam. So against the last pasuk in the previous parasha, Rashi says the shiabud, the enslavement of Bnei Yisrael, had already started. You know how it starts. There's a rule about where you could stand, another rule about what you can buy, another rule about where you have to be. I mean, those are rules that indicate the beginning of Shiabud. It's true that the Melech Hadash, that the new king, came upon Egypt then, caused a lot of difficulty, but it's also true that it was happening already, according to Rashi. It was happening even though on the outside it looked like the Jews never had it better. They were they were eating and living, they were living a Jewish life, so to speak. They were, and they were having many children and sending them all to school and dressing them up with fancy dresses. All of that is true. Nistemu einehem v'libam shel Yisrael mitzarat hashiabud sheitchilu l'shavdav. So Rashi says this. He said something funny in these two psukim that I mentioned, the last pasuk in the previous parasha, and the first pasuk of the present parasha, which is called Chayei Sarah. Which is called... what?
Vayechi.
Which is called Vayechi. It's called Vayechi. The last pasukim of the previous parasha, the first pasuk of this parasha, there's something secretive there. There's something wrong with the way the Torah was printed. And that wrong is called stuma. The parashiyot are stuck together. They're not divided up as they should be. So Rashi says, why is that? So we should think of the word stuma. We should think of that word that means things are stuffed up. And what in particular was stuffed up? Nistemu einehem v'libam shel Yisrael, their eyes. And their hearts were stuffed up mitzarat hashiabud shehitchilu lishabdam. Because the slavery of Am Yisrael had begun. Rashi doesn't tell us how it began. Rashi is confident to tell us that when it finally happened, right in the beginning of Shemot, the next book of the Torah, when it finally happened that there were new edicts about slavery, that the Jews were found themselves to be stuck where they were in the land of Goshen. Yes, they wanted to go there, but when things changed and it became worse, they found themselves an easy target. They were all together. They were all in the same place. They were all doing what they were doing. So Rashi says, the idea, if I look at these two psukim, I say the word nistema was stuffed up. Well, what was stuffed up exactly? It's a hint to tell us that nistemu einehem v'libam shel Yisrael mitzarat hashiabud sheitchilu l'shabdam. It's already happening. That's the first interpretation of Rashi. Davar acher. There's another interpretation. Shebikesh legalot et haketz levanav v'nistam mimenu. Yaakov wanted to tell them what will be. He knew, I would say, Yaakov knew that the situation would be terrible, that it would be very bad, that the slavery would be difficult to deal with. Difficult. So Yaakov thought, if I could just give them that confidence that it's terrible as it will be, it will come to an end. When it comes to an end, B'nai Yisrael will be reconstituted. They'll be able to come to Har Sinai and get the Torah. I mean, that's what Yaakov wanted to tell them. Bikesh ligalot et haketz livanav. He wanted to tell them about the end of days, when everything will be as it should be. Nistam mimenu, the same word, nistam. So that word brings us to this idea that there are two notions. There are two notions that are implied by the way the Torah is written in this particular place. The first one is nistemu einehem v'libam shel Yisrael, that the Jews didn't know what was going on. And the other thing is that Yaakov didn't know what was going on. Suddenly Yaakov didn't know what he knew all the time. And this brings us necessarily to that question that people ask. Yosef was Yosef in Mitzrayim for 22 years. How come he didn't send the postcard? How come he didn't communicate? I mean, he was the king of the world. I always like to say that. He, Yosef, was the king of the world. The whole world was coming to him to ask for food, to buy it, to trade it, to exchange for food, to barter, anything. Anything. Even the people of Egypt gave up all their property in favor of the king of Egypt, represented by Yosef. Why didn't he write a postcard? Why didn't he make a call? Why didn't he do something to recognize the future? Why didn't he do that? Before we get to try to answer that question, let's look at another pasuk. The first pasuk in the book of Vayikra. Just to change the feeling that we have about things. That pasuk says, Vayikra al Moshe, Vayidaber Hashem elav, me'ol mo'ed le'mor. So I have to tell you about this pasuk also. This is an orthographic issue. The aleph of the word Vayikra, I mean, they try to do it here in this text, but I'm not sure you could tell. The aleph is printed smaller than the other letters of the word Vayikra. And if you look in the Sefer Torah, open it up to Vayikra, you'll see quite clearly that the Aleph is written smaller than the other letters. I don't know if this means anything necessarily, but Rashi usually refers to orthographic variations as a way of reminding us that there's a hidden meaning here. There's another meaning. And the problem of this pasuk at the beginning, the first problem of the pasuk, is that it says, Vayikra Moshe, Vayikra Moshe. Why say Vayidaber Hashem Elav? I mean, he just said Vayikra Moshe. The pasuk should have said, Vayidaber Hashem Elav Me'ol Mo'ed Le'mor. Why do we need both of these? Why do we need both? Vayikra El Moshe, Rashi says, L'chol Dibrot, L'chol Amirot, all of the powerful statements, Dibrot. L'chol Amirot, anytime the statement of God is preceded by the verb Aleph Mem Resh, Amirot. L'chol Tzivuyim, commands, Kadma Kriya. It always says, Vayikra El Moshe. Because Vayikra is Lashon Chiba. Why would I say, why would you say, perhaps, why is it Lashon Chiba, the language or the language you use when you're expressing affection? Because Vayikra means come close. Vayikra al Moshe. Moshe. I mean, why do you call Moshe? Because you want his attention. You want him to come close and listen. So Rashi says, the Kol Dibrot, the Kol Meirot, the Kol Tzivuyim, everything God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Kadma Kriya, Lishon Chiba, that's affection. L'chol, and then furthermore, besides the fact that it's the Lashon of affection in general, Lishon Shemalachei Asharet Mishnam Shimbo, we also know that the angels in heaven use that verb, Vayikra, Shenemar, Vikara Ze'elze. We say it in davening every day. Vikara Ze'elze Va'amar, the angels, the Ofanim, V'chayot HaKodesh. Vikara Ze'elze. Vikara Ze'elze. I mean, it's not only the language of coming close, but it's the language that was chosen by the Malachim when they are praising God. Bikaraz elze, aval nevi'ei umot ha'olam. Rashi continues, when it comes to the prophets of the other nations of the world, Nigla Alehem Lashon Arai Vituma. Lashon Arai Vituma. Arai be something that is accidental, and Tuma something that is unacceptable. Shene'emar Vayikar Elohim Bil'am. That when God spoke to Bil'am, Vayikar. Vayikar means Vayikra, missing an aleph at the end. So that even though Rashi doesn't mention the aleph, that the aleph is different, the aleph is smaller, you see it. I think if you look at it for a while, you'll see that the aleph in this printed edition of the Pasuk is smaller than the other letters of the Pasuk. Okay. So now we understand the pasuk. Vayikra el Moshe. God said to Moshe, come closer. That was chiba. That was not content. That was just an attempt to explain to us who is talking to whom. And the actual conversation begins by Devar Hashem Elav Me'o Moed Le'mor. That's the beginning of the conversation. Let's continue in Rashi. Vayikra el Moshe, Hakol ho olechu magia el oznam, a different interpretation of Vayikra el Moshe. That there's something special. The kol, the voice, that was the voice, as Rambam says, it was the created voice. Not the voice of God in the sense that God has a feature called voice. But the created voice came closer and closer to his ears. V'chol Yisrael lo shamin, and the Jews who were in the camp, in that camp around the Oel Moed, they didn't hear anything. Yechol af lafsakot aita kriya. So the Medrash of Yechol is like a Medrashic introduction to a statement. Could it be, Af lafsakot aita kriya, that God called out to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, Af lafsakot aita kriya, even for the times that Moshe Rabbeinu stopped learning, stopped listening, Talmud lomar v'edaber ledibur aita kriya, that God called on Moshe Rabbeinu in order that he should be able to hear what was going to be said. V'lo lahapsakot, not for the hapsakot. Hapsik is to stop something in the middle, but the Rashi himself explains it. Mahayu hapsakot mishamshot. Why do we need hapsakot? I mean, God could just speak to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu would understand. What a hapsakot? Why do you need intermissions? Mahayu hapsakot mishamshot. What were they for? Litein revach leMoshe litvardein bein parasha leParasha. That's what Rashi says. Litein revach leMoshe litvonein, to look into, to think about, to try to understand, bein parasha leParasha. Bein parasha bein inyan leinyan, between one matter and another matter. Kal vachomer lehedyot halomed min hahedyot. Who's the hedyot? What is a hedyot? A hedyot is the simple one, the non-professional one. There's a Kohen Gadol, and there's a Kohen hedyot. There's a Kohen Gadol, he's special. There's a Kohen hedyot, that's all the other Kohanim are called hedyot. So, bein inyan leinyan, kal v'chomer, according to Medrash, kal v'chomer, what? Lehedyot, alomed min hedyot. Who's the hedyot? Me, I'm the hedyot. So that when I learn with my chavruta, when we learn something, we have to organize hapsakot. You have to stop. And you have to think, what is it that you learned? And what do you understand? And what is it especially that you can add on what we call chidush? What novel idea did you come up with? What important insight are you dealing with? Right? Litein revach, again, backwards. Litein revach le Moshe. Litbonein, bein parsha le parsha, bein inyan le inyan. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, who's learning Torah with the Ribbono Shel Olam. You can imagine this thing. Moshe Rabbeinu is supposed to say, excuse me for a minute, I got to think of that. It's really terrific. But in the sense that Moshe Rabbeinu set the stage for Talmud Torah, it's important that we understand that Talmud Torah is not the transfer of information from somebody who knows everything to somebody who knows nothing. But Talmud Torah is the attempt to clarify, to restate it in words that you understand, to be able to present it in the way which could be classified as a chidush. As a chidush, and what is it that we know that from? Hapsakot. What are hapsakot, according to what are we talking about? What are the hapsakot? Bein parasha le parasha, bein inyan le inyan. So if you look in the Chumash, if you open up a Sefer Torah that's in shul, right, like a regular Sefer Torah, you'll see that the Torah is divided up into paragraphs, sometimes longer ones, sometimes shorter ones. And what are those paragraphs for? What are those paragraphs for? To give you a chance. Here's a point where you have to think. Here's a point in which you have to reconsider. Here's a point where there's an issue that has not been resolved. That's what the paragraphs are about. And of course, we carry that on. We carry that on. We don't have to be in the world. We shouldn't live in a world where we're embarrassed to admit that we don't understand. We're not in that world. Not in the world of... Not in the world where the printers have decided that everything is clear, everything is obvious, everything is known. And all they have to do is learn that, you know, what they printed. It seems to me that what Rashi is saying is that in the essential Talmud Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu did, Moshe Rabbeinu learning Torah with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, can you imagine anything more significant than that? It's something that could have been, I mean, it could have been something that stymied Judaism. You could have said, okay, as long as Moshe Rabbeinu, as long as they're learning together, Chavrusa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu, okay, well, listen. But what happens when that comes to an end? What happens when it comes to an end when that kind of Torah learning doesn't exist anymore? So Rashi says to us, Vayikra el Moshe, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to learn with Moshe Rabbeinu. So this Chiba, according to Rashi, Chiba means come close. It's something I want, something we could do together. You do together. Chiba. And the other thing is hapsakot. Hapsakot is that Moshe Rabbeinu says, I've got to think it over. I've got to understand it better. It's not true that everything that God tells me is automatically part of my library of understanding. And Kalvachomer Ladyot Alamed Min Adyot, Ladyot Alamed Min Adyot, that's us. That's all of us. That's all of us. So this idea that the Chidush, that being aware of the novel idea that you yourself come up with, being way aware of the greater interpretation and understanding of what's going on. That's really what Talmud Torah is, and that's what enables the Torah to live. Otherwise, if people weren't learning that way, if people weren't trying to understand things in a better way, if all of those possibilities did not exist, then the Torah would quickly become unmoded, outmoded, unnecessary, unclear, uninteresting. It's only that kind of involvement that Moshe Rabbeinu had, right? That kind of involvement that he got because of the Hapsakot, because of the paragraphs, because there was an indication in the Torah that's written down on the parchment in the Sefer in the synagogue. That Sefer Torah written down and placed in the Ark in the synagogue has paragraphs, and those paragraphs tell me you can breathe, think about it, don't rush. Think about what's going on, just as Moshe Rabbeinu was able to think about what was going on. And remember, Kal v'chomer le'edyot alomed min ha'edyot. It's not only for the people who are designated. I was going to say designated hitters, but I don't mean that. I mean the people who are designated to be really very clever and very knowledgeable. They're not the hedyot min ha'edyot. Kal v'chomer le'edyot alomed min ha'edyot, that's us. That's us. We have to give ourselves a chance. We have to give ourselves a chance to learn the text and learn the hafsakot, to learn the breaks in the text. And so along comes Rashi in our parasha, the parasha of Vayechi. And Rashi says, you know, there's no break. There's no paragraph. I mean, we know. I mean, of course, we know it from Vayikra. You might find that a little bit strange, but, you know, sometimes there's no formal and latter in the Torah. Like, it goes together. So we know from the Pasuk in Vayikra that you need those hapsakot. You need those dividers. The dividers are what enable us to rethink matters, to look into them more carefully, those dividers. So again, look at Rashi. Vayechi Yaakov. Lama parashazo stuva. So we reinterpret Rashi. We say what Rashi is asking is, you know, I know there's something here. I know there's something I'm supposed to think about. Why is it that the Torah stuffed it up? Why did it take away that divider that I need? I need it right now to tell me who was Yaakov and what was his connection to his children and why didn't Yosef try to contact him during the 22 years that he was in Egypt? And why is it that Yaakov was so interested in being buried in Eretz Canaan? Why and why and why and why? For that, I need that space. I need that hafsaka before Vayechi Yaakov, and I don't have it. And Rashi says, Lama parasha zostuma, and that's what he's talking about. They're just talking about, it's a reminder, it's a way of thinking about something. There's something missing. Lefi, I'm reading the Rashi. Shekevan sheniftar Yaakov Avinu, since Yaakov Avinu was dying. Had died effectively, even though we still had a few things to do. Nistemu einehem v'libam shel Yisrael mitzarat ha-shiabud shethilu l'shabdam. So Rashi uses the word nistemu to say that they were not able to see the reality. They were not able to understand what was going on. It was the only way that they could peacefully go into the slavery that was promised to Avraham Avinu by Kodesh Baruch Hu. They're going to be slaves. The only way that could happen is if they didn't understand or see or know what was going on. Because if they were regular, they would have understood. They would have done something. They would have tried to escape. They would have lost out on the positive aspect of their continued history. They wouldn't have known. They were blind. They were blinded in Egypt. They thought they were in a different situation. They thought they were Be'eretz Goshen v'yechazuba. They held on to something. They were that the bracha was taking place right there. All of that was happening in Eretz Mitzrayim. It was happening in Eretz Mitzrayim because Nistima, because they didn't understand. Davar Acher, Rashi says, Shebikesh legalot et haketz levanav v'nistam mimenu. That even Yaakov, who was surely a prophet and might have understood what happened to Yosef, but didn't. I mean, the evidence in the Chumash is that Yaakov didn't know what happened. He thought maybe he wasn't dead, but he didn't know what happened to him. In order to make the slavery less oppressive, more part of their daily regimen in a kind of positive way, to tell the people what would be, and that would be a kind of way of of making sure that they understood that God was with them and that their future was secure. So again, Nistam. So the answer to the question is that it had to happen, and so it was arranged in heaven. And if the arrangement in heaven included Nistamu Einehem V'Libam Shel Yisrael, that the people didn't lose their capacity to understand, and that Yaakov lost his capacity to prophesy, so be it. The promise had to be fulfilled. The promise had to be fulfilled, and that's the lesson of the Nistama. The lesson of the Nistama. I wanted to, we have a few minutes, wanted to just look at a short piece of the Shem Yishvul. Shem Yishvul is the 20th century. Kein Zeh Yish Lefarech Lama Parashat Zo Stuma. You see that? He says, I'd like to explain why this parish is called Stuma. The simple, direct explanation, you see that? Why was it that there's a space in between one parasha and another parasha in the Torah? Answer, kidei litbonen, in order to encourage you to think about it, to get into it, right? V'lechei mitzara galut nistam. And he says, so we understand from this that exile, the exile from Eretz Canaan, is what caused this nistam, this stuffed up situation. And the people in this diaspora are not able to really look carefully at things. Aval yesh lomar al derech hanal dehave begalut dehinei begalut neemar yado paras tsar al kol machmadea. The enemy spread out his arms on all those that were beloved. V'lachem, beloved, remember the beloved by Yikrael Moshe. Therefore, the Torah has to be musteret. So what I wanted to say was, I'll just look at this Shemesh Shmuel. What I want to say is the Shemesh Shmuel says, takes it one step further. He says, okay, I get the idea. I know what Rashi said. I know what the Medrash said. I know that it's important to look carefully, but why is it Nistar? Why does it have to be hidden? Why can't we sort of just say it? Why are you going to just say it? Shelo tiyela sitra achra, the Yetzer Hara, whatever title you like to give this inclination that we have to mess things up. Shelo tiyela sitra achra yeniko mimeno. Because if you put the enemy, the sitra achra is looking for the enemy, according to the Shemesh Shmuel. And the enemy is that we're going to learn Torah and be creative about the Torah that we learn. That's the enemy for him. So he'll try to stop it. And that's why the idea was hidden away. Not hidden from us. The people who learn the Torah, the people who go to Shul or Shabbos and hear the Kriyat Torah, the people who know that this is a fact, that the end of the last parasha, the beginning of the parasha Vayechi, are stuck together. For us, it's not a secret anymore. But for the Sitra Achra, according to the way the Shemesh Shmuel understands it, there is. But the Shemesh Shmuel is dealing with the question of, okay, but why is it hidden? Hidden? He says, well, you know, we have our own problems. We don't always get it right. There's certain things that you can't just talk about so easily. That's the shame. That's the shame, Shmuel. So that 2,000 years after Rashi, the shame, Shmuel said, we need a little improvement. We have to improve the Rashi. It's not enough that Rashi has discovered it, but we have to understand that it remains hidden for a good reason. It remains hidden for a good reason. Have a good Shabbos. All the best to you.